Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. If you've got your Bibles here this morning, I want you to find John chapter 15 as we continue working our way through the Gospel of John. We'll be reading the last portion of John chapter 15 this morning, starting in verse number 18. So John 15, 18. Last week we left off with Jesus and his disciples as they were making their way to the Garden of Gethsemane. Today that's kind of where we still find them. And last week we saw that Jesus and the disciples were talking about vines and branches. And through that conversation, Jesus was able to show us that the goal of us and our relationship with Him is to remain in Him for a long period of time, for us to remain connected, intimately connected with Jesus. At the end of that time, Jesus gave us a few reasons for why we should do that. The first one was that it showed us to be His disciples, that if we remained in Him for a long period of time, it would prove that we were His disciples. Another reason is that it showed that it gave God glory. That's how we glorified God and how we magnified Him, was by remaining in Him for a long period of time. And lastly, we saw it's the only way that we can bear much kingdom fruit is if we remain in Jesus for a long period of time. Today, Jesus is going to give us another reason for why we should remain in Him for a long period of time. You could say, well, or you could say it this way. You look at one of two ways. It's another reason why we should remain in Him, or it's an outflow of what happens if we choose to remain in Him for a long period of time. And today's passage is not going to be like last week's. It's going to be a lot more shocking and a lot more cautionary in its topic and in the manner of which Jesus brings it up. Today's passage, we'll read verses 18 through 25, and then we'll pick up the first few verses, two or three verses, verse chapter 16. So we won't read all of chapter 15 today. We'll kind of pick up verses 26 and 27 next week because they kind of go with the rest of the theme of chapter 16. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to read the first three verses, 18, 19, and 20, and then we're going to talk about them as Jesus gets into this idea of the outflow or another reason for which we should follow after Him. All right, here we go. John 15, 18. If the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. All right, we're going to stop right there because that's kind of the first section of this passage. All right, so today you might have picked up on the shocking and cautionary tale that Jesus lays out. And He does so in a way that has become very common in John's gospel. And that is by using conditional if or whoever statements. Today Jesus is going to make full use, and John's going to record those. Jesus is going to make full use of these if statements. In fact, there are six if whoever conditional statements in this entire passage that we're going to read. And one way we could attack this passage, or one way we could look at it, is we could go through all of these if statements one by one. And we could look at them, you know, we're not going to do that because I think there's maybe a better way to do it. And the first thing we're going to look at is the major verbs that Jesus is calling them to, the action Jesus is going to call them to. And then we're going to kind of sum up these if statements in one kind of overarching idea that Jesus has presented here today. Okay, So if we go back up to verse number 18. Sorry, I'm dealing with a little sinus stuff this morning. So if I make some noises, that's why. he says, if the world has hates you, know. You see that word? If the world hates you, know that it is hated me. The first major action item that Jesus wants his disciples to do on the last night he's with them is to know. Now, if we're to define the word know, it'd probably be pretty easy for you to grasp, right? The word actually means to come to understand, which is not shocking, I know, right? It's know, so it's to come to understand. But here's what you need to realize. In the Greek mind, they're very specific, and there's more nuance in this verse than you might know. You like to see what I did there? Than you might know off the top of your head. Because, see, sometimes in our knowing, we can perceive things. But sometimes our perception is wrong, right? We think one thing, but it's actually another. And sometimes we don't really know, but we give what? An opinion, right? It's, again, what we think in the situation. But the word here that Jesus uses in verse 18, the word know, means a mastery level knowledge. Not opinion, not perception, but a definite knowledge of what's to come. So whatever Jesus is going to say in this passage, he wants them to have a mastery level intellectual comprehension of what he's trying to say. So let me put it in layman's terms. Some of us in here today would characterize our level of knowledge as, hey, I'm a jack of all trades, but a master of none. And in life, that's generally not a bad thing, because you can weld and you can build a garage and you can tinker with your car and get it running, or you can plant a garden, or you can wire a receptacle and plumb something when it's Siberia and the pipes freeze, right? So generally in life, that's not a bad place to be, because you can do a lot of things on your own. But when it comes to what Jesus is going to tell us today, he's like, the jack of all trades level is not good enough. It's not what we're after. Because if we're a jack of all trades at understanding what Jesus is going to tell us today, it will leave us severely wanting. And when it happens, what Jesus is going to tell us today, we'll all go back, I didn't know I was signing up for this. So whatever Jesus is going to tell us, He wants us to have a mastery level knowledge of what is going on in the world and in our relationship with him, and then in our relationship with the world. Now, here's the other word that Jesus uses that we need to know. He uses the word remember in verse 20. He says, remember the word that I spoke to you. A servant is not greater than his master. The word remember, as you might quickly understand, means to recall knowledge, to recall information. But it also, in this context, means to recall information that leads to action. So when we put the two words together, Jesus says, I want you to have a mastery level knowledge of what I'm about to tell you. And then I want you to be able to recall it consistently that will lead to action. Okay? You with me so far? We good. All right, because now I'm going to give you the one overarching idea that Jesus says you need to have a mastery level knowledge of, and you need to remember often, which will lead you to action. And here it is. The world loves its own and hates Jesus and his people. Say it again. The world loves its own but hates Jesus and his people. Now, let me real quick. This is not in your outline. If you got an outline, this is not in your outline. But I felt like this morning that I needed to explain this real quick, carefully. Because today, and kind of as we finish out John, one of the ideas that John and Jesus use is the world. Okay? Now, when Jesus in this passage uses the world, he's not talking about the physical earth or the biology of the earth. He's using the phrase the world as a, listen to me, as a metaphor for the system that operates on planet Earth that is anti-God or anti-Christ. Anti the Holy Spirit. So it is the movement, the operation, the organization of all that is anti-God that is active in the physical world. Does everybody understand me? You with me so far? All right. So when Jesus says that the world loves its own and hates Jesus and his followers, what's he mean? He means the system that is evil and anti-God in the world loves people who are anti-God who live in the world and hates people who are for God and Jesus, the leader of that group. Okay? Now, Jesus is going to be very specific, and this is what you need to get a mastery level knowledge of this morning and be able to recall that will lead you to action. Here's what he says. He says twice, very specific, if they persecuted me, they will persecute you. If they hated me, they will hate you. In other words, those things in the world, those people in the world, you and I, who align ourselves with Jesus, who plant our stake in God's camp, who say, I'm on God's team, whatever cliche language you want to use. Jesus saying, if you side with me, everything that they've done to me, they will inevitably do to you as well. So, it's kind of the everybody, you know, tighten their belt up and get ready for what's coming kind of talk. Because here's the thing. Remember, when does Jesus say this? He's not days. He's not weeks. He's not even, listen to me, he may not even be hours, plural. I mean, this is at the end. And so Jesus knows that when they get to the garden, that he's going to be arrested. And so right before that event happens, which leads to his trial, death, burial, which will eventually lead to his glorious resurrection. But right now, he's preparing the disciples because he's like, if you want to follow me, you better buckle up and get ready. Because they're going to hate you and persecute you just like they did me. Now, on the contrary, Jesus says, if you were or are of the world will love its own. In other words, if you play by the rules of the world and you play by the system of the world's operation, then guess what? You don't have nothing to worry about because the world will love you. Let me give you an illustration. Now, this is not a religious or Christian example, but it fits this idea of the world loves you till you go against the world system and then they try to persecute you and destroy you. Okay? So for 20 years, plus years, give or take, the Canadian Psychologist Association, or that may not be the exact term, has led a guy by the name of, you may be familiar with him, Jordan Peterson, practice and write and publish scholarly papers and see people as a clinical psychologist and do all of this work until just recently. And just recently, the Canadian Association of Psychologists have brought up what they call 13 lawsuits against Jordan Peterson. And they have already, and again, Canada doesn't exactly work the same way as the United States, and it's not a trial in the way we think of trial, but they've already found him guilty. Now I want you to listen to what they've prescribed for him to do to remediate the situation, because if he doesn't, they will take his clinical license away. Listen to what they've done. I want you to listen to language. This is not Travis's language. This was the language he said, verbatim, off of what they sent him, that he has to go into an indefinite social media, here's the word, re-education training at his own expense. Did you catch the time frame? Indefinite. Right? To teach him, who has a PhD, who's been a psychologist for 20 years, on how to use social media the right way. Now, we won't get into all of the fallacies of that line. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. But let me ask you a question. Why? Why recently, in the last few months, has the College of Clinical Psychologists said there's 13 lawsuits? You want to know why? Because, generally speaking, he did not toe the line of the world's line for psychologists to say. He dared to step out and guess what? To speak his own opinion. And to speak his mind and say, that's not right, when the world says we've decided it is right. And so since we've decided it's right, if you say it's not right, off with your head. And literally, he's facing the end of his career if he does not go into an indefinite, he has to pay for, social media re-education program. Might I remind you that the people who re-educate people are the communists and the Nazis. You know China does that today, right? With the Uyghurs, who's a Muslim minority in the very west part of China, that they use as absolute slave labor. You know those Nike shoes that you're wearing? Yeah, they probably were built by slave labor. Just saying. That those iPhones that we all carry around, slave labor factories in China. By the Uyghurs, who they bus in, who they've all put in re-education camps, even though they can't leave, and they're forced to get on buses and go to the other side of the country to work in factories to fill our goods. Those are the people who re-educate people. But now our great friends to the north have decided they want to enter into re-educating people on social media, on the appropriate use of social media. Right? Now again, that's not a religious example. But might I add this? Might I add this? And we're going to give you some examples later in a minute. Might I add you, if they're willing to do this with a popular psychologist, what are they going to do with you and me? Lowly, nobodies. Maybe not nobodies, but in the grand scheme of things, do you have a YouTube channel that has millions and millions of people following it? Nope. Are you going to get to go on Joe Rogan and plead your case? Nope. But yet, what does Jesus say? If you love me, they will hate you and persecute you. So I don't know where you're at today. But I'm just telling you, Jesus is resolutely clear that the world will love its own and it will hate those who follow after Jesus. And then Jesus says in chapter 16, verse 2, he says they are willing to go to extremes to get their point across. It says, they will put you out of the synagogues. In other words, this was the worst of the worst for a Jewish person. It meant you were cut off from the community of God. But even worse, indeed, listen to this second sentence. Indeed, the hour is coming when whoever kills you will think he is offering service to God. In other words, I'm doing God a favor by killing the person who follows after Jesus. We see this in the book of Acts, right? Real quickly, in fact, the guy who writes the majority of the post-Gospels letters, Paul, he in fact started out as a persecutor of the church who was going on the road to Damascus before Christ intervened to arrest and put in prison people who followed after Jesus. Why? Because he thought he was doing God a favor. And then Jesus radically changed his life. He ends up being a servant of Christ, traveling all over the Mediterranean, sharing the gospel, and writing a ton of letters that are in your Bible today. And so Jesus says, hey, look, if you follow after me, the world ain't going to love you. In fact, it's going to hate you, and it's going to persecute you, even doing the worst of the worst to those who follow after me. Then in verses 21 through 25, Jesus explains why the world persecutes us. Now, he's already said, it's because you follow me. But Jesus is going to give us a little more detail as to why the world doesn't love him and therefore doesn't love us. And it broadly comes around these two ideas. Broadly comes around these two ideas. And here it is. Here it is. Here's the first one. The world doesn't love Jesus because they, the world, don't know the Father. In other words, they don't have the world system. The world that is anti-God and anti-Christ does not have a mastery level knowledge of God the Father. Because Jesus' kind of perception of this or intuition or the way he's leading this is, if you had a mastery level knowledge of God, then you would love Jesus. That's Jesus' point to the Jewish people. If you really knew God, you would love me. But here's the second thing. Jesus says, the world doesn't love me, paraphrasing here, because I reveal that they are guilty of sin. Right? Jesus says, he's done two things. Here it is, verse 22. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would not have been guilty of sin. But now they have no excuse. So Jesus says, I've spoke words to the world, to the system of world, and said, you're wrong. And then he says later on, he says, not only have I spoken to the world, but I've done actions in the world that say, you're wrong. And because Jesus has spoke, and Jesus has acted and shown them, not only are you wrong, but more than that, you are sinning against God. Jesus says, the world hates me. But here's the point. Friends, listen to me very carefully. You see that after the comma sentence up there? But now they have no excuse for their sin. Listen to me. Not only does the world have no excuse for their sin, but you and I have no excuse. None. Right? Because Jesus has clearly shown, like, we've got the entire Bible. Right? All the books. Old and New Testament. Right? We've got all of them. And Jesus has clearly shown, and God has clearly shown, from Genesis to Revelation, how we should live in the world. And when we choose to do it, it ain't nobody's fault but our own. And we are without excuse. And so Jesus says, since he has shown the world that they don't know the Father and that they are sinners in God's eyes and that they are without excuse, they hate him and therefore they hate anyone aligned with him. Right? So, the question we have to ask ourselves today is one, okay, we're going to ask ourselves two questions that we kind of move into our application portion. One, is this idea still relevant for today? Right? Because like you know, the Gestapo is not out there waiting to arrest us all before we get in here. Right? Or after we leave. And, you know, we don't live in the world, but I would, in a world where we have to worry about this. But I would say that the same thing that Jesus speaks today, or speaks then, is appropriate for us today. Because the world that you and I live in today is the same world that Jesus and the disciples lived in. And the world is no more for Jesus today than it was in the first century. Let me give you a couple examples. Casey handles all of the prayer points, okay? So I told him, I said, hey, this is your baby. You handle the prayer points. I'll do the memory verse. You handle the prayer points. So I had no idea that he was going to put number 3 on the prayer points. If you haven't looked at number 3, look at it right now. Go ahead and look at it. Because I think it's number 3. Number 3 is going to talk about Nicaraguan churches. You probably hadn't thought about Nicaragua lately. I hadn't until I read his prayer point. And then I was like, what's going on in Nicaragua? So I Googled it literally this morning in my office before I came down. Did you know that in Nicaragua last year, the dictator president, Ortega, basically said that several Christian radio stations and the majority of the country is Catholic. Catholic leaders and churches, they just had to close. You shut them down. Like carbon, you're done. Sent a bunch of people home. Said, you're not welcome here anymore. You want to know why? It's mind-blowing. Because they dared to speak against a dictator. Shocker, I know. But he said, you're not welcome here anymore. So we got brothers and sisters in Nicaragua who are Christ followers, who may not have a pastor anymore. And radio stations that are broadcasting Christian messages are silent now. Because Ortega said that they were aligning themselves with the people who were trying to overthrow the government. Right? How about this? In Finland, a 62-year-old grandmother who was a minister in the Finnish parliament for 26 years. You got that? She's like a congresswoman, like a senator lady. For 26 years, was labeled as a threat to society before being charged with 3 counts, listen to this, of ethnic agitation. Now, I'm not sure what that means. Which is Finnish code for hate speech. What was her crime? She publicly professed her views on marriage and sexuality in what forum? In a tweet on Twitter. And she's facing prison time. Well, you're like, oh, that's in Finland. Oh, that's across the ocean. How about in late 2021 or 2022, our beloved friends to the north in Canada adopted this bill. Listen to it. Okay, listen carefully. This is Bill C-4 into law, which prevents citizens from spreading biblical views on marriage and sexuality. Like, that's not what the bill, I mean, that's not like the line of the language, but that's what the implementation of it will be. So listen to what that means. Canadian parents, faith leaders, pastors, and citizens who hold a traditional view of marriage and sexuality will now face up to 5 years in jail for providing spiritual guidance to those seeking counseling. So that means if 2 people are getting married and I'm doing counseling and we live in Canada, we can't speak about biblical marriage because now it's against the law. But yeah, they're getting married. So like, how do you do that? Right? Notice they didn't say anything, you know, about any other religious views on marriage. Just the Christian view on marriage. I wonder why. Because the world loves its own and hates those who follow after Jesus. You say, oh, well, that's Nicaragua, and that's Finland, and that's Canada. Certainly not here. Might I remind you that John MacArthur's church in California had to sue the state of California to allow themselves to keep on meeting during the COVID lockdowns. Yeah, they literally had to sue the state of California because their governor is a maniacal dictator and wanted to lock everything down. That's in California, my friends. Not in Canada, not in Finland, not in Nicaragua. Now, granted, thank the Lord they won. And the state actually had to pay over $800,000 to their attorneys in attorney's fees. But what happens when there's different judges on the bench? They don't win. The church has to pay, right? Pastor gets fined, right? So they won this time. But the reality is, they may not win every time. So the question is, what do we do? Right? Jesus says, if you follow after me, you will have trouble. To quote our verse today, you will have tribulation, but behold, I have overcome the world. Right? Jesus said, if you follow after me, they're going to hate you. So what do you do? Traditionally, the church has come up with several answers. Number one, you can be a monastic. You can be a monk or a nun. And literally, throughout the centuries, People have run to the desert or run to the forest and started monastic communities where they could honor the Lord and honor Christ without having to worry about everybody. Well, that's one. Some churches and some at sometimes religious organizations and Christians have a chosen assimilation, which means, well, we just better get along with it and let's just go along and, you know, let's just try to, you know, kind of toe the line between where we're kind of like the world, but we're kind of like Jesus and da 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 da. And what that ends up in is what we would term today Protestant liberalism. You know, like some of the denominations today that are for things that are clearly Jesus isn't for in the Bible. Some other times we've chosen acquiescence where it's like, well, we just ain't got a choice. But Jesus, I think, here shows us the way that we should follow. And I'm going to give you an example. And I try not to use football examples a lot because I know not everybody plays football. But I'm telling you, this one is spot on. Well, at least in my mind, it's spot on. Right? So when I played in high school football, I played linebacker. For those of you not familiar with football, the guy's right next to the ball on defense. So I was on defense. I was trying to stop people from scoring a touchdown. The people right on the ball, those are defensive linemen. And then the next kind of guys back are the linebackers. And then the guys in the way back, they're called the secondary. I was the linebacker. So I was like the second row of people trying to stop the ball. And in this one formation, I played on the inside, which is called inside linebacker or middle linebacker, and then outside, which is called outside linebacker. And so in this one particular formation we played, I had to play outside. So if the ball is right here, I'm kind of way over here, right? And so I'm on the outside. And so the coach would teach us how to read keys. That was the language, how to read keys. And that means if this person does this, your job is to do this. And so there was this one formation or one play or one set of plays where I was on the end. And normally I was right off the guy trying to block me. So if the guy trying to block me is right here, I'm going to raise this up so the people is like right here, then I'm kind of over here. And normally this guy would try to block me, the tight end, okay? Brock Bowers, that's the tight end. He would try to block me. But on a certain set of plays, this guy would go inside and nobody would be blocking me. Nobody. And you think, oh, this is great. Straight run to the person with the ball. Not so fast. Because the key is, the read your key is, if you don't get blocked, look inside. If you don't get blocked, look inside. We said it over and you don't get blocked, look inside. You don't get blocked, look inside. I mean, we had to repeat it. Don't get blocked, look inside. And the reason you look inside is because the pesky pulling guard. Because see, what happens is when the tight end blocks down and doesn't block me, 9 out of 10 times, there's an offensive lineman on the inside, guards. They're burly guys who are a little bit quicker than the tackles. They are a little more mobile, and they love pulling outside to unexpected defensive people and just blowing us up. They're a gnarly group, right? And so the guard would be over here. And so my role as the outside linebacker was if I didn't get blocked, I had to look inside. Because a pulling guard was coming my way. Now the guard's job was to hit me and move me this way and create a hole right here. Okay? So y'all got the scenario? I'm on the end. They want to run right here. My job's to not let them run right here. But the pulling guard is coming. And the pulling guard is coming. Now, in that moment, in that split second, I got three options, right? None of which are good. One, I can run straight up the field. But if I run straight up the field, I've not done my job because my job is to hold this spot. So if I run upfield, I've taken myself out of the play, and that pulling guard's just going to go get somebody else who wasn't looking out for him. Okay? The other thing I can do is I can slide further down inside. But that's not going to do anything because when the guard gets around me, he's just going to push me inside and therefore I've given up my spot. The other thing I can do is just be a wimp and just be soft. And when the guy comes to hit me, just, and like let him push me out of the way, which again is not good. Why? Because I've given up my spot. So you know what our coach told us to do? It's going to blow your mind. Blow your mind. He said, when that pulling guard come, you've got to go, pow! And you've got to put your shoulder in him, right here. All your weight, in an instant, right before you're about to absorb the blow that this 200 to 250 pound guy is about to level you and put you in the ground with. You've got to stand just like this, and when he comes with all your force, you've got to shift from your left leg to your right leg, the side I played on, and you've got to go, bam, and you've got to put your shoulder right in his chest. And your goal is to like throw your chest through his, the center of his chest. Throw your shoulder through his chest. You want to know why? Because when you get over there and you take on that guard and you go, bam, you know what you've done? You've held your spot. You haven't moved. Therefore, you've won the play. And even if you don't make the tackle, somebody else is going to. And look at me, look at me. Those pulling guards are what the world's going to throw at you. Every day, the world is throwing a pulling guard at you, a pulling guard, a pulling guard. It might be temptation. It might be a way to knock you off your spot. Because see, look at me. All of us have a spot in the kingdom of God. We all have a role. We all have something that we are uniquely doing in the kingdom of God that only you can do. In fact, you are only around the certain people that you're around. Look, I'm not around the people you're around. Those are your people. That's your area of the kingdom. And the enemy is going to throw the pulling guard at you all the time. And you got three choices. You can run away. You can just be a wimp and just let it consume you. You can run the other way, run that way. Or you can hold your spot and metaphorically throw your shoulder into the enemy and say, not today. I'm going to remain connected with Christ because this is, doggone it, this is my spot. And this is my area of the kingdom. And this is what God's called me to do. And hell or high water, I'm staying in my spot, remaining connected with Christ so that I can produce kingdom fruit right here. And Jesus says, if you align yourselves with me, get ready, if he was a football coach, for the pulling guards. Because the world doesn't like you, and the world's going to try to move you off your spot day after day after day. But we've got to remain with him for a long period of time. Because listen to me, those people that are in your area of influence, that you are around, that you connect with, that you touch, they need the kingdom fruit that's going to come out of you because you and I have been connected with Jesus for a long time. Period of time. So what's your challenge today? Hey, look, I don't know what's going to come your way this week, but somebody in a group this side is going to get the pulling guard this week of the world. The world system is going to throw the pulling guard towards you. You got a couple options. I'm challenging you, throw the shoulder of faith in that dude and say, not today. I'm staying right here. I'm staying connected with Jesus. Hell or high water, hate me, persecute me, whatever. I'm going to stay with Jesus for a long period of time. Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.